Welcome to the Aha Moment with
Erin Backus
and Irene Barber, where we talk to professionals in horticultural therapy and related fields, sharing their journeys of discovering the powerful benefits of working with plants. Sit back and enjoy some inspirational stories accompanied with laughter and refreshments.
All right, and welcome. It is the Aha Moment. I'm very thankful to be here. Is it Monday, Irene?
Yes, it's Monday.
It already feels like a Wednesday. It's like midweek crazies for me. But we are episode 35, and we are crossing the border with our guest. We have Shaney Creamer. I may have said that wrong. Did I do say that wrong?
No, you're good.
Awesome. Shaney is the founder and president of One Green Square Wellness Consulting. She is a horticultural therapy specialist, organizational wellness consultant, heart math certified coach. So she is a cannabis sommelier and educator. Shaney is also an organic master gardener and is the current chair of the Canadian Horticultural Therapy Association. For 20 years, she has been a personal coach and professional facilitator, providing therapeutic nature-based experiences to help individuals, organizations, and communities build resilience to stress and adapt to change. I need you in my life. beyond coaching and program facilitation, Shaney also works with communities to rebuild native plant food corridors, develop public food forestry projects, and reimagine their community gardens to apply a more inclusive therapeutic gardening approach. Whew, so much. And we're so excited for her to tell us her story and tell us what she does and talk all about her and what she does and her aha moments. Irene, that was a big one. Enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we couldn't read your full bio, but you have just like all of our other guests, they have these amazing bios.
But I'll post it. I'll post it.
Exactly. So, Shaney, thank you so much for joining us. And I just wanted to mention that I've never been to Vancouver. I would like to go to British Columbia as well someday. What are some seasonal highlights that are happening right now in that area, would you say?
Oh, well, you know, it's fascinating. Right now is kind of what I always call, it's like Project Love right now, is everything is just the in-between of taking care of everything as it starts to bloom and emerge and grow. So right now there are things like plums and apples and hazelnuts and all of these amazing like fruits and nuts kind of just coming into season. And so those are some of the things that I'm kind of watching right now, is it's they're just about ready. Not quite, you know, it's we're still snacking on one or two pretending they're ready, but they're not. So
that's okay. So that's a good reference for some of us, particularly myself, just because I wasn't sure how advanced you were in the season compared to the Northeast. You know, so because we have nothing of that nature so far. We're like probably a month behind you in that case.
So. Yeah, it's we do kind of often feel like we kind of send all of the things east. You know, our blossoms will come first, and then you get to see kind of what's to come. Yeah. And we can maybe also tell you some of the problems we're having, so you can then prevent them by the time it gets to you. That's what I always think.
And have you guys had an unseasonably warm or weird rainy or weird hot season? Like everybody else has something different to consider this year?
It has been so strange. We had kind of what we often call January. You know, it was kind of cold and rainy. It was kind of a long spring. Yeah. But then when summer hit, it was just hot, 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 hot out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And we now haven't had rain in weeks. But today, finally, today, it is raining again.
Oh, good.
So it's the rainforest. It is supposed to rain a lot more often here.
Yeah.
We're very grateful today that it is finally we have, I think, one or two days of rain. And just a couple weeks ago, they were kind of saying, like, we don't know when it's going to rain again, which is never a good thing to hear on, you know, on the rainforest. So, yeah.
And then give us another thing about what is one of your favorite native plants that you like to consult people?
That's my question.
No. That's not about a hort therapy thing. It's just a normal native plant, you know, nothing.
Okay. It is a really good question. I am very much in love with all native plants, and that is kind of one of my specialties. And so really the one that I think I'm most known for is wild strawberries. And so I do have a tendency to take wild strawberries with me wherever I go. And so lots of people that I work with end up with large patches of wild strawberries wherever they are. And so that's kind of the one that, you know, we have three different wild strawberries that are here in the Pacific Northwest. So that's the one that I kind of propagate the most, use the most, give to people the most, talk about the most I'm a bit of a wild strawberry lover.
Awesome. I think that's a great plant to highlight. Thank you so much. Yeah. I love using Fragraria virginiana. That's the one that we're used to using for native or wild. So,
yeah, we use Vesca a lot as well. So that's the other one that we have. That's probably the most common that I use too. And Chiloensis is the other one that shows up here, but so mostly the Vesca.
You get so much more out there yourself. Yeah. All right. Well, so going down into this discussion about horticultural therapy, why we really invited you today was something that I acknowledge or noticed in your proclaimed title is that you are a horticultural therapy specialist.
Yes.
So what does that mean in comparison to a horticultural therapist?
Yeah, really good question. So first and foremost, I am not yet a registered horticultural therapist, even though I am the chair of the CHDA. I am not yet, hopefully soon to be, a registered horticultural therapist. But I have been working in the field for over a decade now. And so it is something that oftentimes I am also not necessarily doing the horticultural therapy, but I am helping other people to learn about horticultural therapy and to be able to then apply horticultural therapy for themselves or for the clients or population that they happen to be working with. Okay. So oftentimes I am actually working with the staff because the population that I know best is actually the corporate wellness is kind of my background. So I am often talking to people about how they might work with their particular population or their clients or their staff, rather than actually being the one who is applying the horticultural therapy. Now, I have done a fair bit of work over the years actually applying horticultural therapy as well and being the actual horticultural therapy practitioner or person actually delivering the services. But most of what I do is a little bit different. And so that's why it's just easier to kind of put that little bit of a twist on it so that I can actually talk to people about that and also be sure that they do recognize I'm not yet a registered horticultural therapist. I do things a little bit differently, and this is why, and this is how.
So you're building an army of potential horticultural therapists down the road. That's really
that is the plan. That is, you have just seen through the veil and have discovered my almighty plan. Yes, that is exactly what in many ways what I'm trying to do is, you know, is to just allow people the way in to help understand what is horticultural therapy, what is therapeutic horticulture, how can I apply some of these practices, how can I work with this both for myself and for my own family, and or as I said, for other people that may be my clients or staff or people that I'm working with. So I just want to see more of it.
And when you say corporate healthcare, are you referring to like hospitals or assisted living facilities, or what are you referring to?
Yeah, sometimes yes and sometimes no. So I do really love to work in any care facility just because that is often where it is easily most applicable. But I do a lot of work also for people who are either just going through a lot of change, which in most cases right now is a lot of organizations, or organizations that have gone through any type of trauma or a loss, that they have maybe suffered, different issues in their workplace for a multitude of reasons. And sometimes it's just a really high stress workplace. And these are individuals that just need something to help them that is a little more practical, that is a little hands-on, that is something that they can weave into their day instead of necessarily taking maybe a whole hour and assigning themselves to a care routine or to a, you know, self-care, you know, do yoga, do meditation. A lot of the time I'm talking to people about how can you notice nature near you for small, quick remedies for yourself or for those you're working with. That is either, you know, what are the 30-second things that you can do or the 2-minute things that you can do while you are maybe walking out to a bus stop or to a car, or you are walking to your next meeting, or you're going to the grocery store. And so that it allows people to weave some of these techniques into their daily routine, sometimes instead of it being an extra task that they then have to try and find time for.
Literally stop to smell the roses while they're on their way to the workplace or the
Exactly.
Bus.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that just made me think, have you, as you said, you used to deliver services, but I'm also just wondering, and maybe Aaron, you can plug in on this. Do we have horticultural therapists who provide contract services to corporate office spaces on like a monthly basis, providing like therapeutic horticulture wellness sessions?
There are very few of us, but I am the one that I know of. So that definitely is something that I work with organizations. Always ongoing programming, as you know, is going to be better than a one magical event that is supposed to just make them all feel better and all of the stress is just going to dissolve. And so, you know, a lot of organizations are now understanding that having things like, you know, mini wellness breaks in the day, or having a space to have a yoga session, or to have an outdoor walk, or to have a nature therapy walk, or to have that kind of a thing there is to their benefit to offer to their staff. And also, particularly in the Pacific Northwest and in the Vancouver area, we have a lot of rooftop gardens. And so a lot of these organizations have actually put a lot of money into a lot of these spaces. And so really I can talk to them about, well, what's your return on investment in some of these spaces? And so legitimately, let's use some of these beautiful gardens that have been created and that are creating these lovely green spaces, whether it be a park on the ground or a you know, a rooftop garden. And let's actually use these spaces to the to the greatest benefit to the most people. So I'm often just drawing their attention to natural resources, like literally nature, nature-based resources that they may have actually not even known were either in the building or just outside the building or just, you know, within a you know, 2-minute walk around the corner.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think it's a great outlet, and just to inspire our listeners to think of like other channels that are not our traditional, you know, agency channels, where we, you know, many of us are either in a rehabilitation center or an adult day program space or a botanical garden. You're kind of encompassing or creating a platform for kind of a mainstream work environment, which is definitely necessary, especially after, you know, since COVID. I'm sure this is really, you know, blossomed, no pun intended.
I mean, I definitely know of people that HTs that work with people that are, you know, have high stress, that work in a stressful job with hospitals and have a unit there, or like work at colleges for like students, things like that. But corporate world, I don't know. I mean, listeners, if you know of anybody else, we would love to talk to them. Let us know.
So Shani, if you could tell us now, sharing a little bit about your journal or your journey, excuse me, of
tell us your journal. It's private.
Or you know, the narrative version of a journal.
I'm just messing.
Yeah, thanks for the Freudian slip humor. So anyway, so if you could tell us a little bit about that, was it something that you started to think of when you were young or when you were in the work environment? Like, how did you determine that working with plants was a really meaningful occupation and connecting it to people?
Yeah. So it's, you know, I always say, and, you know, I've heard some of your other, you know, guests say as well, that it's like, I'm never sure where to start. Like how far exactly. back, how far back do I really reach for, you yeah. know, I remember that, you know, I have two lovely grandmothers who, you know, had me carrying a berry pail as soon as I was old enough to hold one kind of right. thing, and had me out in wild berry patches and making sure that I didn't tell the sisters about where, you know, their sisters. Where the good patches were out in the wild. Yeah. So, you know, I think I came upon it, honestly, you know, I came from a farming background on both sides of my family from kind of central Canada. But in many ways, I thought that that was kind of just like a background kind of side piece of my life. And so I had studied psychology in university and was very interested in group processes and kind of, you know, group psychology. And so, you know, corporate and organizational wellness was a really good fit for me. And I had done a lot of studies around personal change management and things like that. But I had also studied herbal medicine, and I had studied a lot of native plant medicine. But I had always just studied native plant medicine because it was what I needed. And so it was just my own personal health path that had kind of led me down the path of working with native plant medicines. And I was very blessed and lucky enough to get mentored by a native medicine woman called the Root Woman, who shortly after I had finished my psychology degree, I was having all these health problems. And so I sought her out actually to take an introductory to herbology course. And she ended up just kind of taking me under her wing and teaching me all about the actual relationships with plants, and not just what can I use a plant for and what parts of a plant do I need, but how do I actually build a relationship with different plants, and why are there particular plants around me, and what do I need to know about that, and how does that impact me as a person knowing what plants are around me? So she really kind of opened up my eyes in a different way to understanding plants. But I had no idea that this would have anything to do with my actual career or anything. It was kind of just a background personal passion of mine. And I, you know, I had a rather varying career. I had my own, I've always been very kind of entrepreneurial minded. I had my own vegetarian restaurant in Saskatchewan, central Canada, which was very odd for that time in that place. But I've always been trying to connect people with plants in different ways, right? And that food happened to be a really good one. But then I shifted into working with food security and community development here in Vancouver in the downtown east side. So I shifted into kind of running food security type programs. And then I found I was doing so much around wellness that I ended up shifting into corporate wellness because, quite frankly, it paid a lot better. And it was a lot easier to keep a job than it was keeping five or six contracts constantly on the go working in community development. So I shifted for almost 14 years into mostly corporate wellness with a specific kind of specialty in change management, what is often just called stress management. Working with a lot of nonprofits, women's leadership groups, things like that. But as the universe sometimes does, it throws things for, you know, throws life for a little bit of a curveball. And in 2010, my father, who had been a farmer his whole life and, you know, a fit, he was young, he was only 60 years old, ended up with esophageal cancer. And was put into the cancer ward in Regina, Saskatchewan, in the middle of winter. So frozen, nothing, middle of winter in a very sterile cancer ward in the hospital. And so I was lucky enough to be able to take some leave and go and care a little bit for my dad. And what was fascinating was I could instantly tell that as someone who spent most of his life, even in the winter, out connecting with nature on one level or another, even just this having to be indoors, there was something that was disconnecting him that I couldn't quite understand. And I, you know, he had no interest in any of my psychology nonsense. He didn't want breathing techniques. He did not want to talk to any kind of a therapist, myself included. But he was interested in certain things that I noticed. And so the first thing was I couldn't even bring in any flowers because it was a cancer ward, so sterile, God forbid, dirt, right? So what I could bring in, though, was a stone because I could bleach a little stone. And mm-hmm. I found a stone that had a little carved labyrinth in it. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of just like a pocket labyrinth. It was like wow. to just use with your thumb if you
yeah,
can't
yeah, yeah.
a labyrinth. So first I showed him this and he was like, yeah, okay. He understood the concept. He's like, yeah, all right, put that in his pocket. And I thought, oh, I'll never see that again. Whatever. It's you know gonna end up in the field somewhere, but whatever. You know, I'm doing my best. And then after he had had surgery, he was encouraged, you know, we were encouraged to get him to kind of walk around the ward as much as possible. And it was a circular ward. And you know, so I learned right away that, you know, you ask questions like, how far do you think we can go today? Instead of, do you want to go for a walk? Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like, okay, there's subtle things that I can do to help. But what I started to notice was when we went for walks, was that if we stopped at the typical places that people would stop and either chat, like at the nurse's station or at the little TV room or, you know, the typical places to kind of stop and have a chat. If we stopped at those places, he would always get tired and have to go back to his room, and we'd never make it all the way around the ward. Mm-hmm. But in the Regina Hospital, there were all kinds of pictures that you can imagine of prairie landscapes and all kinds of, you know, old fields and old machinery and old pictures of, you know, farmland. Mm-hmm. And so if we stopped and talked about the nature in the pictures, and I said, Dad, what crop is that? What are they doing? What is that? What field is this? What am I looking at? Do you remember anything looking like this? What are those trees? Mm-hmm. Then we would get all the way around. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, isn't that interesting?
It was a positive distraction for him to feel like, hey, I want to follow through and see more of this.
Right. And so yeah. it was something that was really simple, but had an actual profound difference on how he yeah. was actually even just walking.
Exactly.
So then we did simple things like we shifted his bed. So instead of looking at the frozen parking lot, he was looking at the sky. Right. So, oh, okay, now we can talk about the sky. And then one day I had the most profound kind of moment. And this was, we were sitting there, we were looking out the window, and he couldn't see much, but he could see kind of like the window sill, kind of the ledge just below his window. And it's freezing. It's 40 below, you know, horrible weather out, you know, kind of November in Saskatchewan. And he looks out and he sees a pigeon that is roosting on his window ledge. And now he's no lover of pigeons. Like he grew, you know, he's a farmer. These are just rats with wings that steal his grain as far as he's concerned. This is not any love of this animal that is, you know, going through his mind. But he looks out there and, you know, sometimes if you see an animal, you kind of just have a conversation kind of to and through this animal. Sure. And so he just starts kind of saying like, hey, bird, like, what are you doing? Like, it's cold. What are you doing out there? And then all of a sudden he kind of has this realization and he realizes that, oh, this pigeon probably should actually be like roosting in a barn or in a shop or in you know, a space with a bunch of other pigeons. Mm. It's actually quite unusual for it to be out on a ledge by itself in this weather. Mm-hmm. And within just a short, like less than 2 minute conversation, all of a sudden he says, well, I wonder if that bird is outside by himself because he's sick.
Aww.
And the very next thing he says is, Shaney, I'm actually afraid to stay in the hospital by myself alone. Would you stay with me?
Oh my gosh.
And I had never heard my father use the word afraid. Yeah. I had never had him ask for help or any type of assistance in his 60 years so far of life. But that small conversation through and to that bird allowed him to have psychological layers unlayered,
right, revealed
in minutes. Mm-hmm. That I knew that I was witnessing something magic, but I didn't really fully understand what I was actually watching. And but I knew it was like, this was a psychological thing that was like, I don't have any trick for that. Like, I just I have no, there is no Jungian theory that talks about that other than let nature do its thing and get out of your own way. And so then my dad actually passed away on Christmas Day of that year. But it truly was. I got back the rock that had the carved labyrinth in it from his bedside, and it was worn almost smooth. And so I knew in that moment, I was like, there is something to this whole, why did the connecting with nature, why was that his solace? Why did that help him so much? Even though, yeah, I get it, he's a farmer, but there was something different there. And then it was within, I think it was like 10 days, less than 2 weeks later, I opened up a Vancouver newspaper and there was a full page article about horticultural therapy and my soon to be teacher, Ann Kent. And I was just like, what? Horticultural therapy? This is a thing? Like, I understand these two words, but putting them together, I had no idea. And so it really was this magical aha moment of like, that's it. That's what my brain and my heart has been wanting to do, is mm-hmm. to connect this relationships with nature and plants that I have in my heart and that I've been taught by my native medicine woman, mm-hmm. combined with the wellness of human beings and the psychology background I have. Mm-hmm. So that was the aha moment. I never did go back to my corporate career full-time after that leave. I remained at part-time after that and went back to school to get my HT certificate, and then went back to get an organic master gardener certificate and do a native plant reforestation project in Hawaii and do all of these kinds of things just to turn around my business to become a nature-based business. So by 2015, I had officially left all of my other kind of corporate employment and was full-time with my business of One Green Square. So that was my aha.
I love it. I think that is so, again, there's so much power in the relationship that we have with, and I hate to say this, but going through the process of life and death, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like so many of us have had that kind of realization of what's really impactful and powerful and what not to take for granted anymore. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
You're not alone in that discovery process. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, how did you come up with the name of your business, by the way, One Green Square?
Yeah, so it is, again, I mean, it's a story that I love to tell, all these stories. So I'm just so excited you have a podcast where people just share.
Well, you got the platform, so keep it going.
This is the right place. So One Green Square, it really has multiple meanings on multiple levels. It's kind of got at least three different meanings, depending on what day you kind of ask me or what thread to take. But the overall kind of message really comes from a simple study that I found. It was when I was trying to find a name for my business, and it was when I was, you know, in the midst of looking through all things kind of horticultural therapy related. And I came across a very simple psychology study that was all about creativity and problem solving. Mm-hmm. And it was a very simple study where they just simply had, they had the participants in the study walk into the room, and in the room on the table was, you know, a little binder. And on next to the binder is a simple little tin can. And you open up the binder. First page just says, you know, welcome, study number, whatever. You turn the page and it says, you know, here's your tin can. Please describe, you know, something to the effect of, you know, how many different ways can you use this tin can? Right?
Oh, so yep.
Creativity in problem solving. How many ways can you use this different little item?
Yeah.
So with that, what the people in the study, the participants, didn't know is that on that very first page, which was just like welcome to the study, there was a colored square or a colored rectangle. And each time it was either, you know, sometimes it was black, sometimes it was gray, sometimes it was blue, sometimes it was yellow, sometimes it was green. And none of the colors had any impact on the study except the green. So when people saw just a very simple 2-second glimpse of a little green rectangle as they just like flipped the page, uh-huh. that 2-second glimpse of a green square actually increased their creativity by up to 20%. Which, is just amazing, right? So that led me, of course, down the rabbit hole of like, why is green so important? And so, of course, there is all kinds of other psychology studies now showing all kinds of different reasons why we may be, of course, drawn to the color green. You know, it's water, yeah. It's food, it's all these different things.
Yeah.
You know, our eyes can see more shades of the color green than anything else.
It means life. I translate right? life because it's verdant. It means growth to me. Yeah.
Right. Like it's, you know, it's hardwired into us, obviously, you know, whether that's biophilia, hortophilia, to care for it, whatever. It's, we're clearly drawn to this simplicity of just one color.
Yeah.
And so really it's, you know, it's one green square. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, the simplicity of if one green square can have that kind of an impact on our brain and our body, well, think of what a whole garden can do. think of what a forest can do, right? And so it really is just, you know, helping people to understand that there is simplicity in this, that it does not have to be, you know, complex, deep, you know, all of the, you know, the difficult things that we think about when we think about therapy. Mm-hmm. It really genuinely can be simple and amazingly profound. And so that's kind of where one green square comes from, is it's just the simplicity of just think. If one green square can change our brains in mm-hmm. just a couple second glimpse, mm-hmm. then let's just imagine what else we can do. So mm-hmm. I do carry around little green squares of things everywhere with me. So yeah.
And you can even make it kind of a real life proportion or scale so that people can identify, wow, what can you do in a 5x5 space? What can you do in these small spaces? So Shani, with those green napkin work breakthroughs or icebreakers, so to say, do you find that people actually doodle on them or get creative with their, you know, application of using them? I'm very curious.
Yeah, you know, it kind of depends on kind of how I'm shifting the conversation or how we're going to use them. I do have a lot of people who will do things though, like they will actually keep the napkin and they will tell me about where they have placed the napkin. You know, they'll say, oh, I've put it up here so that I look at it all the time when I need to be more creative. Or one person actually said that she had pinned it to her mom's curtains because that was what her mom could only see certain things. And so she had pinned it to a place that her mom could look at, knowing that it would help her. And so, you know, I do sometimes get odd stories of where people are like, this is where I took my green napkin, or, you know, I'll give people little pieces of green felt and they'll send me pictures of like, this is where I have my green square now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a really cool thing, especially in the time of which, you know, if people are in a setting where they don't have ample supplies of plants, you know, this is a creative opportunity to think about what is available and just use your imagination, which is, I think, sometimes very hard for people to do, actually. So it's an exercise unto itself.
It is. And it's just a little subtle reminder. You know, I remind people too that oftentimes there may be nature that you might not be noticing. And so the little green square is just can I look around and is there something else that I could connect with that mm-hmm. I maybe was forgetting, you know, the little plants in the sidewalk crack, or, mm-hmm. you know, maybe there is something out of my view that I can see, or, mm-hmm. you know, maybe it's as simple as the nature connection that they have at that moment is with their breath,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. and maybe they can't get outside or see a plant or see something green, but they can try and connect with nature on a different level. And so sometimes the green squares are just, it's just a nice subtle little reminder that they see several times a day, then reminds them to take a conscious breath or to look outside if they can, or even mm-hmm. just be more conscious about the water that they're taking a drink of. So mm-hmm. all of these little things is just subtle reminders.
Yeah.
So one of the things that, so I absolutely love lavender and I grow as many different kinds of lavender as I can. And I know that's probably kind of a real typical one for folks. But one of the things that I've been doing with a lot of people lately that I really like is it's kind of like what I call choose your state, or like choose your own adventure kind of horticultural therapy or therapeutic horticulture, which is I encourage people to just at the, whether it be the front of your house or the front of your office or the front of your space, is to have a lavender plant on one side and a rosemary plant on the other. And then you choose your mental state. You choose your mood. You choose which one of these do I need as I'm entering my home or as I'm entering my office or as I'm entering the space. So do I need some calming and some soothing? And I want to just like give the lavender a little bit of a scrub with my hands and a nice old inhale. Or do I need some rosemary and some kind of pick-me-up lively energy? So I like that, just kind of like choose your mood before you walk in to anywhere. And so that's what I've been encouraging most people to put out lately.
I like that.
I just imagine like this game show going on in your head. I want to be like, choose your mood.
That is, you have now seen into the background of my head. So that is exactly where my brain goes. And I'm like, let's make this fun. How am I going to walk in here? And let's, you know, be conscious of what we're doing and play at the same time.
So with that, what are some plants that are actually in correspondence or correlation, I should say, with lavender as far as soothing? What other ones would you recommend if for instance, if somebody didn't like lavender, which I can't believe it, but it does happen.
I know it is one of those things. It does happen, right? So jasmine is another one. So flowering jasmine, anything rose. So again, most of the florals are going to be a little more in the relaxing side, but sometimes it's also just the floral that people don't like. And so, you know, I often will say if those florally things that may cause relaxation in your brain aren't happening for your nose, then find something that you actually find relaxing. So each individual can be a little bit different. And so that's, you know, I usually start with, I kind of go down the row of like, if not lavender, then try jasmine. If not jasmine, then try rose. And after that, then I usually start to just be like, okay, you tell me, what scents do you like?
And it could be a textural thing rather than aromatic sensation. So something like the fuzziness of a African violet foliage, you know,
right? Or like some nice lamb's ear, you know, something that you can actually just like, The other thing often I've used in that context, if we're talking textures, that is kind of that soft, soothing, is pussy willows. I will often have people, you know, carry around a little pussy willow toe in their pocket. That is the same kind of that soothing, soft, remember to be soft, remember to be gentle kind of.
And then as far as something for invigoration or energizing, what else besides rosemary would you think of?
Yeah, so there is kind of the obvious is mint, but again, mint can be problematic. A lot of people actually genuinely don't like mint. So then I often go to the citruses, right? So there can be even things as simple as like a little bowl of like lemon or orange peels that you can use on that side, you know, especially if you're doing textures and you've got something like pussy willows on one side, then the, you know, some crunchy orange peels on the other side that is more invigorating. That's kind of usually where I go on that side.
Scented geraniums. Some people find that to be energizing, or, you know, like it's a highlighting plant, you know what I mean? So and then they've got so many different aromas now. I mean, everything from a citrus or a chocolate or a rose. It's kind of crazy how many different aromas it got.
It is. It's amazing what you can play with nowadays. So it's fun to just kind of give people those options, right? And let them know that, you can have both and then you get to pick. So,
thank you. That is a great tip. I think that was an excellent response. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Well, Shani, thank you so much for your story and telling us a little bit about your journey. We really hope that you can come and visit us in maybe an AHTA event sometime soon. But also, you know, coming to Maine, you have an open invitation. And I'd love to have you come to the Botanical Gardens in Maine whenever you think you can get back east, which is not easy for you, I'm sure. So,
you know, we didn't really even say where we were to you. So I apologize.
Right. Yeah.
I am outside of Boston, Massachusetts. And then Irene, of course, just said she's in Maine. But
Well, I would love to come and visit you both. And absolutely, if you are up in Canada in the Pacific Northwest, please come and play. Mm-hmm. I will take you around to all the fabulous therapeutic gardens. And yeah, it was just a real treat to get to meet both of you. So thank you.
Here. Please look up Shani Creamer at One Green Square. You can type that into the internet and you will find Shani's information there to contact her with some further inspiration that she's already shared with us. Thank you so much, Shani.
Yeah, and then I'll post it in the informational link too, if that's okay, Shani.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then I will happily share this podcast around with everyone because I'm just so inspired that you are sharing all of these aha moments and everyone that I know has one. And so it's just, this is such a beautiful treat and such a wonderful thing that you're doing. So I'm so excited to get to spread it around.
Thank you.
All right. Good night, everyone. We will see you next time. Hope your summer is going well and hope you're not really getting too
overheated.
I know, too overheated out there. And we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.